And from the KTOO newsroom, I'm Anna Canny. Hundreds of people in Juneau's Mendenhall Valley are still working to put their homes back together after the devastating glacial outburst flood in August. And everyone agrees that something must be done before next summer. The city wants to fight floodwaters with a temporary riverside levee. But some riverfront property owners feel the plan might be too risky, invasive, and expensive. Since the moment floodwaters receded, the city and borough of Juneau has been scrambling for a plan to keep hundreds of homes in the Mendenhall Valley dry next year. Their current pitch, at the advice of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, is to line the banks of the Mendenhall River with flood barriers. But they can't pull it off without the cooperation of about 75 riverfront property owners. And some, like Sean Smack of Meander Way, say the city's plan puts pressure on them to protect other at-risk homes in the Mendenhall Valley.
If we say no, or if we fight this plan, will we now be the bad guy in the community? So it's put us, I would say, all riverfront property owners in a very difficult position. I don't want to be the one person that says no. I don't want to be the hole in the wall.
Smack doesn't doubt that the barriers could work well against Juneau's outburst floods, but he worries that the city's plan is too expensive and invasive. The barriers, made by a company called HESCO, are basically massive, heavy-duty sandbags in metal baskets. They're used for flood fighting across the nation, and the Corps gave them to Juneau for free. The proposed levee is only meant to be temporary, a way to buy some time for a more permanent flood prevention plan. But to build it, the city says they would need to connect a wall of HESCO barriers across yards that are uneven, on soil that is unstable, along a riverbank that zigs and zags. And that will require a lot of prep work on private property, and a lot of money, possibly up to $10 million when all that work is done. It's not yet clear how that cost will be shared, but it's almost certain that property owners like Smack will be asked to cough up some money, and he worries it'd be a waste.
Are we throwing a bunch of good money at a short-term plan that doesn't do much else past that?
Many riverfront property owners have already made hefty personal investments to fortify their properties. On Marion Drive, the Mendenhall River hits Ann Lynn's property straight on. So over the years, she's spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to fortify the riverbank multiple times.
We bit the bullet. It's part of living on the river.
Though her house has been spared from this year's flooding, the water poured into Lynn's yard, causing great stress to her husband, Jeff. He had long struggled with a weak heart, and he died just days after the flood. In his memory, friends worked to protect the yard he loved. They raised the edge of the lot 4 feet with packed gravel and lined the whole thing with a wall of large boulders. Lynn thinks the work will be enough to protect her, for now. But with the proposed levee, she feels like she's being asked to pay for her neighbor's protection, too.
I don't know how much those barriers are going to cost or what they're going to expect us to pay, but for us to pay for the valley is not right.
Lynn is more focused on finding a permanent solution, like draining would-be floodwater from Suicide Basin or building a levee around Mendenhall Lake to divert floodwater before it flows downstream into the Mendenhall River. She thinks the barriers could be a distraction from what the city should be focused on instead.
Fix the problem. Fix the point of the problem. Not put Band-Aids all the way up and down the river.
City Manager Katie Kester says the city fully intends to pursue a permanent fix, and they've discussed many options with experts at the Corps. But they've gone with the HESCO plan at the Corps' suggestion, and Kester insists that building something more permanent will require more federal funding, and perhaps more importantly, a lot of research to secure that funding. Kester acknowledges that the flood barrier plan is incomplete and imperfect. She emphasized that it's only intended to be a stopgap before the next flood comes, but she feels it is the best bet to protect life and property between now and next summer.
If the residents don't want the project, it's going to be hard for the project to proceed. But, you know, I come back to the cost of doing nothing and what that means for our community.
Deb Johnston, who also lives on Meander Way, worries that the pushback to this plan might ultimately lead to inaction. She supports the HESCO barriers, and though she's one of the many Valley homeowners that's not on the riverfront, she said she's willing to share costs. No matter what floodfighting plan prevails, Johnston feels time is of the essence.
When I walk in this neighborhood, there are still houses that are unoccupied that have demolition debris on their lawns. So I don't see how any of us can possibly wait 3 to 5 to 6 years for a permanent solution without this becoming a derelict neighborhood.
The Army Corps of Engineers will share more details of their HESCO project planning at Monday night's Committee of the Whole meeting. And the city will roll out more details on the project's budget and cost sharing at the next regular assembly meeting later this month. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny. And Alaska's election results will likely take some time to come in following Election Day. Election officials will release first-round results starting shortly after the polls close at 8 p.m. next Tuesday. But as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, in close races, there's only so much you can know on election night.
Here's the deal. In any race where no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote, we'll have to wait until November 20th before anyone declares victory. That's partly due to the state's long window for absentee ballots to arrive after Election Day, though they have to be postmarked by Election Day. Here's Division of Elections Program Manager Brian Jackson.
Because in state laws, we do have these allowances for the ballots to be returned up through the 10th day for the absentee ballots mailed within the United States, as well as the 15th day for those mailed from outside of the country.
And that can be a significant fraction of the overall total. In 2022, some 60,000 votes were counted after the final report on election night. That's almost a quarter of all votes cast in that election. Here's what we will know on election night, according to Jackson.
We'll count election day votes on election day, of course, included in the election night tallies will be the early voted ballots voted through Halloween, as well as some absentee ballots.
Maybe you're thinking, what does it matter? Whoever's ahead on election day is probably going to hang on and win the whole thing. Absentee votes generally don't change the overall result. And a lot of the time, you'd be right. But not always. Let's look again at 2022. At 1 a.m. the morning after election day, Kelly Shabaka had a 3,000-vote lead in first-place votes. By the time all votes were counted, 2 weeks later, Lisa Murkowski had pulled ahead by some 2,000 votes. And okay, fine, in that race, it didn't really matter who was in first place. They both made it to the final round of ranked choice tabulation. But it goes to show, votes counted after election day can make a significant difference. And for that matter, so can the order that you rank your choices. All that's reported on election day are first choice votes. If it's close between the second and third place candidates, or the third and fourth place candidates, a small number of votes can make a difference. So Jackson says election officials run the tabulation on one day, November 20th, to include as many countable ballots in it as possible. And Jackson says there's not much the Division of Elections can do to speed up that process. The deadlines for absentee ballots to arrive are set in state law.
It would take legislation to change this, to make it faster.
Now, all of that said, Jackson says to expect the first results somewhere in the neighborhood of 8:30 or 9 p.m. on election night. There will be updates every half hour or 40 minutes or so after that until about 11 p.m. when counting starts to slow down.
Our goal is to try and report 100% of the precincts before it's before we call it a night or an early morning the next morning.
There's also a lot that happens after Election Day aimed at making sure the results are fair and accurate. There's a post-election audit conducted by the State Review Board. Officials hand count a random precinct's ballot from each state house district and make sure the machine's count matches the human count. If it's off by more than 1%, all of the ballots would be counted by hand, although that's never happened since the audit started in 1998. Also, boards that determine whether absentee and questioned ballot voters are qualified are bipartisan. So, for that matter, is the State Review Board, which certifies the election. And observers are allowed at every stage of the process. Jackson says no part of the process occurs behind closed doors.
There can be many eyes watching the process, being a part of the process, etc.
And one last thing. It's important to remember that the results remain unofficial until the State Review Board certifies them. The target date for that is November 30th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.